Welcome to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees, a conversation for those who own, manage or protect intellectual property.
Welcome to the Appleyard Lees Green Shoots podcast. I'm Kate Hickinson, partner at our firm, and today I'm joined by my colleague and European patent attorney, Richard McLennan, and Aileen Miller from the Industrial Biotechnology Innovation Catalyst, also known as IBIC, in Manchester. Richard and I work together in our Manchester office. I have a chemistry background and generally handle chemistry type inventions, and Richard is a biotech attorney. We've worked with Aileen in the past, but since she stepped into her role as IBIC director, we've been excited to sit down together to talk about the programme and why industrial biotech innovators in the Manchester and Liverpool city regions should be excited to engage with Aileen's team if they haven't already. So thank you for joining us, Aileen. Could you tell us a little about yourself and your background?
Hi, yeah, it's lovely to be here today. And I'll tell you a little bit about myself in terms of I'm a professor, I'm an academic here at the University of Manchester, been here for over 20 years. So my own research area is looking at self-assembled materials where we take inspiration from nature and make materials from single building blocks and apply them for different applications, from cultured meats to scaffolds for tissue regeneration, for drug delivery materials, and now a new application area is looking at bioplastics. I also wear various innovation hats within the university. I'm Chief Scientific Officer of UNIT-M, which is an exciting new initiative announced by our new Vice Chancellor to really help raise the profile of innovation and put it at the heart of everything we do in our research and our teaching and our social responsibility. I also look after our Industrial Biotechnology Innovation Catalyst, which is a place-based initiative looking to help academics capitalize and get knowledge exchanged out from the university to work in partnership with businesses, but also to help them spin out and create startups from the research that they're doing. I'm using sort of my own experience in my own company that we founded with my collaborator, Arbutra Sayani, 10, 12 years ago, called Manchester Biogel, which is a startup which we grew over a 10-year period, closed, exited the company and sold the technology on. And now we're starting to do that again with a targeted therapeutic application, which is super exciting. So innovation and generating impact from research.
So as patent attorneys, it's great to be working with somebody who has such an interest in innovation and taking that forward commercially. I understand that you and Richard met in your previous life with Manchester Biogel. Is that right?
Yes. So I think Richard came and helped give the company some advice around IP. And really, that was my first deep dive into the sort of the breadth of what IP actually is and what it means. So when we had the company, we initially licensed out a patent from the university, which we developed the science behind. And then we also broadened out our IP portfolio to include copyrighted material, trademarks and know-how as well inside the company. So yeah, that's when I first met Richard.
And you said the outcome of the company was you exited and the registered IP was sold. Were there any issues you came across when you were doing that, or some information or any training that might have helped you with that process?
I think training every step of the journey would have been helpful. What I tell a lot of founders now is really to start with the end game in mind. So really think of what exit strategy you want to have, what your board wants to see as the exit strategy, and then work towards that and line up your IP in behind that and get your data room in order. So it's not a mad scramble at the end when you try to pull everything together. I think it went relatively smoothly in the fact that we sold on a lot of the sort of the trademarks and some of the know-how and the copyrighted material. And that was relatively straightforward. And then the other aspects of the IP went back to the university and then licensed out to Cell Guidance Systems, who are now selling the hydrogels for us.
It was great to hear you say have the end goal in mind, because and I'm sure Kate will say the same thing, but it makes it a lot easier as patent attorneys writing patent if you have an idea what the end goal of the commercialization is. And obviously that can change over the years. The lifetime of a patent is 20 years long, so a lot can change in that time, but it's useful for us as attorneys to understand what the end goal is, I think, so that you can draft an appropriate patent that covers the activity you actually want to do. You don't have to have a perfect exit strategy, but what's the commercial product, I think, is important to understand.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see how we've taken the learnings from that, from when we did the first company, Manchester Biogel, to now what we're doing with the second company, Mola Farm. So in the first one, our IP was around developing a material platform technology, which is very broad. And it was, you know, it was a hydrogel from self-assembling peptides. And these hydrogels can be used for all sorts of different applications. And yes, that was the attractiveness of them. But it was also in some terms the downfall, because they could have so many applications. Actually, we need to really hone down what our USPs are, who are our target customers, therefore what is our target markets, and then what's our exit strategy. So our IPs or portfolio was quite broad in that sense. Whereas with Mola Farm, the new company, we've got a specific targeted end goal in terms of using the hydrogels for drug delivery for a specific therapeutic treatment. Therefore, it's quite specific in terms of the application. So in some senses, it's easier to write the patent, but of course, we're going as broad as we can in terms of application areas to get the most value out of the patent and cover us as broadly as we can.
So I expect that you're going to take quite a lot of that learning into your new venture as director of IBIC. So IBIC relates to industrial biotechnology. I just wondered how broadly you would define industrial biotechnology.
So I define it quite broadly in terms of it's looking at any kind of manufacturing process where you can incorporate bioprocessing, or you can incorporate enzymes as the catalysis. So engineering the whole manufacturing process to include a biological step, also looking at supply chain materials, so looking at using biomass as a feedstock or capturing CO2 emissions and then using that as the sort of the carbon feedstock, and using enzymes or engineering biology to then use that carbon as a building block to make something useful. And again, we're kind of sector agnostic, so we look at everything from materials to medicines to biofuels to advanced manufacturing methodologies and techniques.
You explained what industrial biotechnology is. IBIC itself, is it a collaboration between universities, a consortium of universities, city regions?
Effectively all of the above that you mentioned. IBIC is led by the University of Manchester. It was co-created with the University of Liverpool, and we've looped in our Northwest University base of Salford, Manchester Metropolitan, and also Liverpool John Moores. And if there's anybody out there listening from Bolton or Chester that want to get involved, then please feel free to reach out. And so we're EPSRC funded, so Research Council funded, to the tune of 5.3 million. And the whole objective of the project is to build a cluster in the Northwest around industrial biotech. So obviously we're looked in Greater Manchester, also Liverpool City region, but we also looked down into Cheshire to include places like Alderley Park. We worked very closely with the combined authorities, in particular Greater Manchester Combined Authority and Liverpool City Region Combined Authority, to make sure that we have that triple helix partnership between the universities, the civic bodies, but also our industrial base within the Northwest. So Northwest is one of the four chemicals manufacturing clusters in the UK and home to 780 biotech companies, depending how you categorise them. And we've got over half of the UK's CROs for life sciences within our region. So we have a plethora of micros, SMEs and large corporates within our region to work with. So it's to support knowledge that we've generated within our HE sector to work in partnership with companies of any shape or size and build those partnerships to get that knowledge exchanged out to be adopted and used to build and generate economic growth.
So is that academics in partnership with industry, or are you thinking more startup spin-outs in collaboration with larger companies, or a mix of all of it really?
So predominantly academics working in collaboration with existing companies. So that's 2/3 of the funding. And then 1/3 of the funding is to help generate new companies. So it's looking at creating startups and spin-outs by exploiting university IP, whether that's through spinning out or through license agreements to create startups, etc., or encouraging students, staff who've got their own idea and the IP doesn't belong to the university, so probably more students, and then they can create and take their idea, test it, try it, and get financial support and mentorship and a little bit of wraparound care from IBIC to help their ideas flourish.
IBIC sponsored the Build a Biotech competition run by the Northwest Biotech Initiative, which was aimed, I think, at more early career rather than professor academic level. It was postdocs, undergraduates, PhD researchers. And actually, I was pleasantly surprised by how well-versed they all were in commercialization. And some of the pitches that I saw were better than some of the pitches I've seen from people who've done it a few times. And it was quite impressive to see that that talent is there if it's given the opportunity to actually go forward and commercialize something.
Yeah, I was blown away as well by the standard of the pitches from the applicants that made it through to the final of the Build a Biotech competition. It never ceases to amaze me, not just the ideas that are coming out from our student and early career researcher community, but just the level of business acumen that they're picking up along the way. They're really like sponges and soaking in all the advice and mentorship that initiatives and companies are offering at the moment. And yeah, I wanted to be able to fund them all, but we had a finite budget and we did support, I think, 4 in the end. And I think 2 or 3 of them have already, from 2 years ago, have already gone on and incorporated and have started to grow their businesses using the support network that's around the Northwest, which is, it's just brilliant to see. And it's one of the reasons why I love what I do, is seeing ideas come through, flourish, and then hopefully we can push them to not just grow, but thrive as well.
So it feels as though this is a really rapidly developing field. Do you have interest from the large corporates as well?
Yes, definitely, because they've got supply chain issues. They have net zero goals that they wanted to move to. So, you know, thinking about our region, we have Unilever, AstraZeneca, we have Croda, we have Bristol Myers Squibb. So there's lots of different companies from the larger corporates as well that want to transition into this area. And, you know, it's quite a fast growing area. So you want to always be at the cutting edge. So they're looking and leaning on universities as well as developing their own R&D arms to work in collaboration with the wider region.
Yeah, it all sounds really positive.
Yeah, it's exciting. And it's one of the areas that's been identified for growth in the industrial strategy. So we're looking forward to some more funding coming through our research councils and DSIT potentially to help the whole ecosystem build and thrive.
So if people are interested in funding, how do they find out more about that and how to apply for it?
Yeah, so if you just Google Industrial Biotechnology Innovation Catalyst, we'll pop up. Check out the website, the types of grants that we have available. The information is on there. We also run a series of different events. So check out the events webpage online as well. Alternatively, email me or email ibic@manchester.ac.uk. We'll get you on our mailing list and then you'll be the first to hear of any events and funding opportunities. We have funding that rolls forward every 3 months. So there's high turnover of different application opportunities and we've got a variety of ways that we can fund collaborations. So please reach out. If you've got topics that you want to discuss or problems that you need a solution to, doesn't matter what stage you're at, we've got money to put on events, networking sessions, workshops, closed problem solving sessions with an audience of researchers across the Northwest. More than happy to hear from you and let's see what we can do.
Are there any prerequisites for a business plan or a use case, or can that be developed as part of the application process?
Yeah, it depends on where you are in your journey. So if you're a more established company, then we would expect more of a sort of a traditional collaboration or a mature collaboration in terms of getting sort of knowledge exchanged out. If you're a very early stage, then we have sort of smaller relationship builder grants, which are up to 10K at the moment. And they're there to just help us explore what the issues are, what problems the company is having. So then we can help translate that into a collaborative piece of work, which can then go on to the next funding round. If you're a very early stage, if you haven't incorporated or you've literally just incorporated and you have 10 pence to kind of get you through to your next milestone, we have got some commercialization awards. These are for ideas or people that are located in the HE sector across the Northwest. We can offer up to 50K to help with the commercialization journey And that can be used for prototyping or getting proof of principle data for your value proposition, or it could be to look at bringing on a mentor or developing out the data required to get your patent through the next stages.
I think each of those companies at different stages will have different challenges with the amount of data they have, and if they're an academic, they might want to publish the data that they have, which is often a bit of a backwards and forwards between the commercialization and the academia, is that if you're an academic, you have to publish, the old saying, publish or perish. But if you're trying to file a patent, obviously you don't want to publish at all. Have you come across that as part of these collaborations, sort of the desire to publish and market something and really get it out there versus the requirements of patenting the process or the whatever it is to keep it secret until it is filed?
Yes, we've come across this a lot, and it's about training and just explaining the patent process so academics understand that it's not a publish or patent, it's a publish and patent, but you do it in the right order. So you obviously secure your patent, you lock down the data, you get it filed, and then you can publish. And then you decide what exactly you publish. And that all depends on what you're patenting and where the secret sauce is, etc. But because even if you patent, it doesn't mean that you can't publish. It's just a timing issue. And I think sometimes when you explain that to academics and students and researchers, they don't always realize that at first. So it's about a little bit of an education piece and saying that it's not one thing or the other. You can do both. You've got to be very careful about your timeline. I've made that mistake myself before. You do it once and then you learn from it. So, yeah.
I don't think I know a single patent attorney who would be annoyed or frustrated by one of their clients sending them something and saying, we want to publish this press release or this paper. Is there anything in it we shouldn't say? Or is there anything in it we can file a follow-up patent application for? I think we'd be generally happy that that's happening.
Times are changing within the university sector. Innovation is becoming a more commonly used word, and people are starting to see that they can be rewarded for having IP, creating spin-outs, having a license deal, and part of an academic career. So the more we celebrate that, more we talk about that as a university sector, the more that'll start to become the norm. So hopefully we will move away from that real publish or perish scenario, that patents will be seen as equitable in those annual P&DRs with staff and students.
I think it's always good as well to have a conversation about whether a patent is the right way forward. It isn't always. In this field, some of the inventions relate to methods of manufacturing, and they can be quite difficult to police. And that's not always that you want to file a patent application to that. You might decide to try and keep it secret, or you might decide that your protection actually isn't appropriate in some circumstances. But it's always good to have had that discussion first and to make a decision on that.
Yeah, and having know-how is just as valuable as having a patent in terms of the company perspective. I think you just need to think about what your company's value proposition is, what level of investment you need for that company, and how you're going to attract investment into that company. But investors will equally invest in companies that have got know-how. They don't always have to have patents behind them. I've seen companies that have got know-how as their core IP and still go out and raise significantly and have exited successfully. So yeah, all sorts.
Yeah, I think it's important as well to have that strategy, to have an answer when an investor is doing due diligence and says, what's your IP strategy? How do you protect your value proposition? How do you protect your place in the market? I think it's important to have that answer, and you won't have that answer unless you've thought about it early on. So even if you decide not to go down the patent route, or you decide to go down the patent route, then I think it's important to have some sort of logical reason as to why you're doing it.
Feels like a good place to finish. Thank you for joining us today, Aileen. To our listeners, if you're interested and would like to learn more about or engage with the Industrial Biotechnology Innovation Catalyst in the Northwest, then please contact Aileen Miller on LinkedIn or head over to the IBIC website. Alternatively, if you're interested in hearing more first-hand accounts of innovators starting successful businesses in the UK, then please follow Appleyard Lees on LinkedIn for articles, podcasts, and more. For now, thank you for listening to the Green Shoots podcast. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees. If you have a question or issue you would like our IP specialist to discuss on the podcast, then email us at ip@appleyardlees.com.